Thank you very much, Ms. Pele. Yes, we have noted. I'm sure the colleagues will respond to that. Yes, let's go straight. Dr. Damana, I didn't call you properly. I didn't know you are a doctor, you know. We need doctors in this time. Are you giving any jabs today? Doctor. Hello. Dr. Damana. Ms. Matati, are you hearing me? Colleagues?
Loud and clear, Chair. I hear you loud and clear.
Okay.
Yes, Chair, we can hear.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm here and I was having a little bit of a difficulty seeing where my mute is. So, yeah, as my colleague has already said, it would have been great to have Department of Transport lead us. But anyway, we are here, it's the DTI team. So in terms of the delegations, it's myself, Chenga Damana, and Ms. Tandi Pele. We are the ones who are leading the delegation from the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. Then we have the NRCS, the CEO. You have already had a meeting with them before, so you know them. Then the SABS, it's going to be led, the delegation from the SABS is being led by Ms. Jody Schultz, who is the lead administrator at the SABS. So to kick in, to move on to the next slide, before I even move on, I think we are grateful to be here to explain our work, the reason being that we think and we are of the view that the more South Africa is aware of quality and the role of standards and compulsory standards, the better it is South Africa going to be for everyone. So it is good for us to be here to explain what we do. So with the introductory remarks that we're making today, I'm going to be quite short in my presentation. So the SABS and the NRCS, as you know, they report to the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition. These entities have been set up by government. They have been set up with a mandate to assist local companies, local industry to produce products locally. They have been set up to help local companies, firms to be able to export products to overseas markets. They also have a very important role to play in protecting the public against unsafe products. And I think this is the reason why we are here today. So they do help industry, they help regulators, they help government in ensuring that the products that are on the market are actually safe and easy to use. So in many instances where they play this role, you find that the policy owning department or the policy owning regulator is actually the one who directs them to do what needs to be done. And I think it's this area that even the public protector has seen is an area that needs to be optimized. The work that is being delegated to this entity has to be properly monitored by the departments that have delegated the work. So even the public protector has seen that this area do require some further optimization. Moving on to the fourth slide. So for the issue under consideration today, and my colleague has already mentioned this, The Department of Transport is the policy owner of the safety of vehicles on the road in South Africa. And that is in line with the National Road Traffic Act. So the National Regulator for Compulsory Specification is delegated to do some work by the Department of Transport. So in turn, the NRCS uses standards. They take the standards and declare that those standards must be considered to be compulsory. And so compulsory standards are also known as technical regulations or compulsory specifications in the way that we refer to them. So in many instances, when you come up with a compulsory standard, you need to be working together. Ideally, you need to be working together with the regulator that's going to use that compulsory standard. So we see that, moving on, that the SABS is the entity that develops standards for us. But the SABS goes further and it's able to help us assess whether products are actually performing in terms of the requirements of the standards. The SABS is accredited as a conformity assessment provider, so it helps us in government, it helps the regulator confirm that the products are meeting the regulatory requirements, but it also helps industry confirm that their products are meeting the requirements of various standards that are out there. So we thought, because we are here with the entities that are going to give you much more, I would call it meat in terms for discussion. So we thought as the department, we'll just give you a short introduction and let our entities that are the real implementers actually take us through answering the questions that you have put through to them. So with that, I want to take this opportunity to thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you so much, Doctor and Ms. Pele. I want to invite my colleagues to ask questions. But my view is that we would have loved to hear if you had sight of the report by the public protector, given all what you have said. Did you have sight of the report of the public protector? What has been your role thereafter in checking if any of your entities performed their responsibility as you have properly articulated or not? And if not, why didn't you do it? But I think the presentation fell short of that. The introduction, as I say, is most welcome. But as I said in my introductory remarks, there is a report in front of us, which I assume you have had sight of. And we were more interested in saying what has been your role since you received this report, and what are the things that you are doing? That is my remark that I want to give. However, let me invite my colleagues before we go to the SABS. Colleagues, there it is. I don't know. I see Honorable Hunsinger. Anybody else? Colleagues, I'll give you one bite. Please, you'll bear with me. I'll give you one bite. So if you try and consolidate all what you want to ask on your first bite. If there are any follow-ups, we'll see at the end, but we need to save as much time. After him is Honorable McDonald's. Anybody else? All right, in that order, Honorable Hunsinger, followed by Honorable McDonald's.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Dr. Demana. Doctor, firstly, I would like to know how long are you in your current position? Second question, given the fact that one of the entities under your watch and in the view of the public protector, engaged in a outright regulatory failure. What is your opinion about that? What is your position about that? And then secondly, with regards to complaints received, when have you become aware of the occurrence of converted panel vans into taxis? And are you aware that ambulances have also been converted, since it's not even mentioned in the public protector's report? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to add my voice to what the Honourable Hunsinger said. He's raised most of the issues that are... But, Chairperson, with all honesty, what was presented to us does not assist us in getting to the bottom of this, Chairperson. I would have thought that in light of what was presented to these entities regarding the public protector's report, that there would have been some substantive inputs from them, because they are part and parcel of this investigation, Chairperson. So, Chairperson, I don't know how we're going to address this. I'm a bit concerned, because the fact is these vans were converted. The fact is other trucks are being converted, ambulances are being converted, many other trucks are converted, and it seems like it's blame shifting. It's not us, it's them, it's them, and then not us. And then, Chairperson, I don't know, I'll leave it to you for guidance, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable McDee. As you lower your hands, shall I invite either Ms. Tandy or the good doctor? Anyone, you feel free, whoever is competent or would like, although there's a question directly to the good doctor, but over to you.
Thanks, Chair, Honourable Chairperson. We thought we were going to do an integrated presentation, although we are doing it in bits and pieces. I think on the issues of substantive matters around what have we done, I think some of the answers will come from the presentations from SABS and NRCS. So I'm not sure, do we then wait to hear that and then take some of the questions after we have had their input. But safe to say that, Chairperson, that indeed we have had the side of the report from the public protector. It does indicate some gaps in the regulatory space between ourselves and the Department of Transport, things that we need to also look at as we go forward. As a DTIC, we have begun a process where we have began to do what we call technical infrastructure integration process, because as you know, the entities are mutually reinforcing one another in the work that they do between NRCSF, NIMISA, and SANAS, so that we begin to look at how best do we really support the regulatory space and be able to be responsive to the issues on the ground. So I think, Chairperson, if we allow them, we allow it, subject to the doctor responding directly to the questions that were posed to him, that on the issues of substantive matters, can we allow the presentation from the two entities to be rolled out, and then we can take some of the questions at the end.
Doctor, you may go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I'm only responding to the issue of how long have I been in my position. I think it's over 20 years. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Honourable members, there it is. I think in the interest of time, let us let the SABS and the NRCS present. And if you do allow me, honorable members, let's take both presentations so that we can then engage on both presentations. I do not accept the excuse given by DTIC, but I will comment later, because there's a particular reason we wanted the Department of Trade and Industry to be here. And there's a particular reason NRCS is coming for the second time. SABS, we are hearing them for the first time. However, in the interest of time, let us invite both the SABS and the NRCS to give us their presentations. Thereafter, we'll engage on them and take it from there. I see the hand of Honorable Sithole. Can I hear you, colleague? Honorable Ketamabala. All right, maybe your hand is up by mistake. Can I invite then the SABS, whoever is leading, to take us through the presentation. Once more, colleagues, it's not to appreciate all what you are doing, but because of time, I really plead that we go straight to the issues. If we have time, we will deal with the others. Over to you, SABS.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you very much. My name is Jody Scholtz, and I'll be doing the presentation. I'm joined by quite a few members from the South African Bureau of Standards. And Chair, with your permission, I would just like to ask them if they could just introduce themselves while I'm bringing up the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Let's get the introductions while the slides are coming up.
Afternoon, Chair and honorable members. My name is Lungelo Ntobongwana. I'm the acting executive for laboratory services and sales at SABS. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, honorable Chair, honorable members. My name is Neil Slaughton. I'm the group manager responsible for corporate strategy.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair, honorable members. My name is Joseph Leotlela, and I'm the head of legal services at the SABS.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. My name is Eric Seeger. I'm from the SABS Transportation Testing.
Okay, thank you very much. I don't know, Ms. Gold. I hope they are done. Yeah.
Yes, they are. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to present. Chair, the presentation I think is just going to focus primarily on what we do. We establish in terms of an act, and I think the rest of the presentation flows from this. We develop and promote and maintain South African national standards. There's quality that we promote with respect to commodities, products and services. And then we render conformity assessment services, basically auditing and testing services in relation to that. Chair, I think, thank you very much. We looked at the questions. We also looked at the public protectors report. And one of the questions posed to us was, how does SABS work alongside the NRCS? I think DDG Pele had indicated that the South African Bureau of Standards is part of a group of entities called the Technical Infrastructure Institutions, and each have different mandates. So the Bureau of Standards does standardization, certification, and testing. The NRCS is the regulator. SANUS gives us our accreditation, which is the formal recognition to carry out specific tests. This accreditation is reviewed annually so that we as an institution are also kept current. And then the National Metrology Institute of South Africa, they look at calibration through measurements, the international standards of measurement and how measurement is traced within the country. And all of these fit into via DDG Pele into the DTIC. I think the primary difference between the South African Bureau of Standards and the regulator is that the South African Bureau of Standards is responsible for voluntary standards, whereas the NRCS puts out compulsory standards. So all of the companies that engage with the South African Bureau of Standards, they do so on a voluntary basis. The relationship between the two, even though we are located on the same premises, our services as the South African Bureau of Standards, except for the maintenance promotion of South African national standards, are all commercial in nature. So we would compete with other commercial entities that do testing and certification or conformity assessment. So it's some of the big competitors like SGS, Bureau of Veritas, and then we also have much smaller, very niche competitors who compete with us for testing and certification services. So the regulator relies on independent third-party conformity assessment services, and SABS is one of a number of third-party conformity assessment service providers that the NRCS uses. It's not an exclusive relationship that exists between the two entities. For instance, if the NRCS puts out a tender to bid for work or to request for work, the Bureau of Standards would be one of those service providers that would put out a bid for that work. In terms of the retrofitment process, the role of SABS was limited to testing services, and here we tested, there were three tests that we performed. We tested samples received from the South African Taxi Finance, which is a subsidiary of the South African Taxi Development Finance Company. The further question that was raised is what were the minimum requirements for the safety test, and could more or different tests have been requested by the Department of Transport? So yeah, I think the previous slide had indicated that the samples were not sent to us by the Department of Transport. It was by the SA Taxi Association. And so the tests are... The tests that are performed are underpinned by the national standards, and then tests are then conducted in terms of a customer's request. Because SABS is not a regulator, it's the responsibility vests with the relevant regulator to ensure that any test that is performed or any test report that is issued are sufficient for the approval that is being sought. Mm-hmm. The three tests that SABS conducted are listed there. It's the rollover protection for restraining devices, and the tilt test. And these are the three tests that the South African Bureau of Standards performed. The exact date, Chair, when SABS became aware that Toyota condemned these conversions, we haven't been able to get those records. But I think the point that the Bureau is trying to make is that we are not a legal authority who is able to regulate the conversion of vehicles. And so we have no power in that space. I think as part of the public protector's report, the Department of Transport has made a submission that the process of retrofitment didn't require authorization from the original manufacturers as is outlined in the National Road Traffic Act. I think the view that the DOT expressed to, in our view, explains why the retrofitment of conversions was done without the approval of Toyota. Moving then just on to the minimum safety specifications, the SABS, we develop the standards and then we test according to those standards. So we don't set the specifications for any specific brand. The process of standards development is a consensus building one. It consists of a technical committee is established, which comprises of industry, academia, government, and they come together through a process where they develop a standard. It's put out for public comment for a legislative period of 60 days, and thereafter it is gazetted, and then it becomes a national standard. So it is not brand specific at all. It is developed in terms of a consensus building approach, and these are all voluntary standards that industry adheres to because they understand the importance of quality, they understand the importance of compliance. And so I think just highlighting the difference between us and the regulator could use at its discretion any of the South African national standards in its a compilation of a compulsory standard. I think this is just to reinforce the point in an earlier slide that we do not have powers to issue minimum safety specifications for any vehicle conversions from people vans to people carriers, as that is not our our mandate. And I think this is also just saying the same point earlier, just reiterating that we're not a regulator, and so we can't enforce a recall of any vehicles. Chair, I think in terms of the mitigation factors, what SAVS does is where there are concerns about a particular standard, that is then fed back through to a technical committee who considers that inputs, and then they could make amendments to the standards, and that also then goes through a normal standards development process. And so I think the measures just in terms of mitigation are not with the South African Bureau of Standards. The monitoring mechanism, likewise, is the regulatory function is not within the South African Bureau of Standards. We acted as a test house, testing those three specific areas. Chair, I think those are my comments. I think just in conclusion, Chair, I think having studied the Public Protector's report, there were a number of statements that have been made that don't reflect the factual correctness of the role of the South African Bureau of Standards. Chair, thank you very much. That's our presentation, and I'll be guided by you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will then go straight, colleagues. Please note your questions, so that we can have both presentations and then we will engage. I hope I have your support. Let us go straight to the NRCS and then we will engage. Over to you, NRCS.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon to everyone. Chair, I'm not going to introduce the delegation. It's the same delegation that we had before last year. They will also introduce themselves when they assist with questions that might come out of the presentation. Now it has frozen. I'll move straight away to the NRCS mandate in terms of the automotive space. As you know, Chair, we are appointed as the inspectorate of MIBs, the manufacturers, importers, and builders of motor vehicles. We perform certain functions, limited functions, albeit as delegated by DOT in terms of the legislation. In terms of the approval process of motor vehicles, all motor vehicles must comply with compulsory specifications. In this case, we are dealing with minibus conversions. Many buses covered under VC 8023, which specify minimum requirements for passenger carrying vehicles with a total capacity of 9, including a driver. This will be commonly referred to as M2 and M3 motor vehicles. What I want to emphasize here, Chair, is the last bullet point that the vehicles that are already operating on the road must be dealt with in terms of sections 44, 87, and 89 of the National Road Traffic Act, which vests the powers on the law enforcement authorities, such as RTMC, to impound such vehicles that are not roadworthy or did not comply with the Act. The recapitalization project was introduced by the Department of Transport in 2006. The emphasis here also, Chair, is the fact that there were certain exclusions that have been articulated by the Department of Transport when they announced the TRP project. Those inclusions become critical in the manner in which you have to view the report of the public protector. One of the exclusions is that private and touring vehicles were excluded from recapitalization project. The second issue is that there were additional requirements that were set up by the Department of Transport, and they have been introduced in terms of the road traffic regulations. Those requirements are additional to what a compulsory specification will normally regulate. These are the additional requirements, Chair, as stipulated by DOT in the regulations. The strength of seats and seat encouragements, prohibition of fold-up seats and metal seats, seat dimensions, notice of load and other requirements that have been added in addition to the normal requirements as included in the compulsory specification. The registration process of the MIBs obviously falls within the purview of the DOT in terms of Section 5 of the NRTA Act. The role of NRCS is to inspect the MIBs, to verify compliance of samples, issue approvals, and compliance certificates, as well as INATIS model numbers for specific model design. The mandate of the NRCS ends with the issuance of the approval, compliance certificate, and INATIS model to the MIB. Once the vehicle has been on the road, it will be the role of the MIB to ensure that the vehicle is properly registered and ensure that the vehicle comply with the legislation that is administered by the Department of Transport. It is not the role of the NRCS to ensure that the vehicles continue to comply with the legislation that is administered by the Department of Transport. The issue of the illegal conversion of panel vans into Toyota Quantum, we became aware of it in June 2008. I must indicate, Chair, the NRCS was only formed on 1 September 2008. So by the time the NRCS was formed, the issue of illegal conversion of panel van had already occurred. In order to deal with the illegal activities regarding the import and of motor vehicles, ITEC commissioned a working group. That is where during the deliberation in this working group, that the issue of illegal conversion of panel vans came to the fore. And when it came to the fore, it was suggested that a special task team be formulated under the leadership of the Department of Transport to look specifically at this issue, so that we don't get the workshop, the working committee does not get distracted by the issues pertaining to modify taxis, which has come to the fore. At that time, it was reported that there were 2,353 panel vans that have been converted into taxis. We have embarked then, as the NRCS, on a blitz inspections as a way of intelligence gathering to understand what is the extent of the problem outside there. And we conducted blitz inspection over a period of two weeks, where we visited 43 dealerships, few registered MIBs, farm unregistered MIBs, and the taxi ranks. The findings of those inspections, Chair, we found that some of the registered builders of minibus category were found to be involved in this illegal conversion of panel vans. Most dealerships were found to be in partnership with either registered or non-registered MIBs to conduct these illegal conversions. And non-complying Toyota Quantums, which were converted, were predominantly registered on the INATIS system as panel vans. So despite that, we issued, as the NRCS, the INATIS for a panel van. This found a way of being registered illegally by the registering authorities as taxis. Some of the findings include that none of the registered builders converting panel vans were having a certificate issued by the NRCS, except for Toyota, which was the registered importer of Quantum minibuses. There were also the other illegal conversions happening at backyards by unregistered MIBs. Further to our investigation, the SIU also carried some investigations, specifically in the Vereeniging Licensing Office, where they found that there were a lot of irregularities in terms of how the vehicles have been registered, including the incomplete documents supporting the registration of particular vehicles. Insofar as the NRCS is concerned, we conducted inspections in 2008, which led to one of the MIBs, Umgeni Auto Trimmers, being delinked from the system, so that they would not be able to further convert or illegally convert the panel vans. The two other MIBs that we have discovered in the process was Taxi RS and Peterson Taxi World. In this case, Chair, we found that they do have a certificate to convert minibuses, but they did not have a certificate to convert minibuses meant for reward, in other words, taxis. So we tried to link these MIBs, but there was a legal challenge, and the legal advice was that we cannot lawfully delink them from the system because they are entitled to convert vehicles. Bear in mind what I said before, that there were specific exclusions from the Department of Transport when they announced the TRP project. Because of that exclusion, it became a loophole that some MIBs were able to exploit in order to do conversions under the auspices that those conversions are not meant for to be taxes. There were other investigations that were done, especially in KZN, where some illegal converted minibuses were seized by SAPS, and it was recommended that they be put through the TRP process that has been undertaken by DOT. We don't know what came out of that at this stage, but we'll come to that when we do the presentation further. The requirements for correction of the illegally converted panel vans was finalized by DOT in 2009. And that required that a certain test as stipulated by DOT had to be undertaken by the conformity assessment bodies like SABS and Geotrek. The project and then was announced and started on the 1st of March 2010. TFM, which is one of the MIBs, was involved and was issued with a certificate to undertake the these conversions. The approval was for two models comprising of high roof taxis and low roof taxis. As I said, the testing is not the mandate of the NRCS, but it is the mandate of the SABS and other conformity assessment body. Hence, they have tested in accordance with the requirements that have been stipulated in the regulations for TRP. What NRCS does is to look at the test report and ensure that they have been done in accordance with the prescribed regulations. The TFM has undertaken some of these modifications, and NRCS was expected to inspect each of the modified vehicle and issue a letter of authority once the inspection has been done and it is satisfied that it is the vehicle is compliant to the compulsory specification and the additional requirements. Each owner has the responsibility to conduct DOT and ensure that the vehicle is undertaken to TFM for retrofitment process. In terms of our records, Chair, it shows that from the time that the retrofitment process started, only 331 LOAs were issued with the letters of authority, which will mean that 2022 of the identified vehicles have not been retrofitted. So they are still out there and not compliant with the specification and the retrofitment regulations that have been published by DOT. Now, dealing with specific findings from the PP, one of the issues that has been raised by the PP is that NRC has failed to take effective and efficient measures to ensure that MIBs comply with the compulsory specifications in order to restrict illegal conversion of goods carrying panel vans into Toyota Quantum panel vans. The difficulty with this finding, Chair, is that it ignores the fact that the identified illegally converted panel vans were already in existence even before the NRCS was formed. In other words, it can be that the NRCS failed to restrict something that happens before it was even established as an entity. Secondly, Chair, we as the NRCS, since we were established on September 2008, we have been conducting inspections. Obviously, our inspections are based on a risk-based approach. We have, on average, conducted over 1,000 MIB inspections. And in that process, we haven't detected any kind of illegal conversion happening of the panel vans. And in instance where we found non-compliances, we have acted as the NRC as we have indicated with the example of Umgeni in KZN, where we have delinked the model numbers of that MIB. The second issue that is raised by the PP is that the letter of authorization not required from Toyota in respect of the retrofitment process. As I have indicated, the retrofitment project was approved by DOT. We as the regulator, our role was to ensure that the MIBs complies with the compulsory specifications, they comply with the additional requirements that have been adopted by DOT for conversion to be legalized. So the fact that Toyota might have express concerns with the process, it is beyond us because it's the process that has been approved by the Department of Transport. The second issue is that, is that the NRCS did not identify the 1,986 vehicles despite being empowered by Section 17 of the NRCS Act. As I have indicated, Chair, already in 2006, during the workshop that has been commissioned by ITEC, it was reported that there were a number of illegally converted taxis that were already identified by DOT and RTMC, purely because they have unlimited access to the eNATIS system. That's why they were able to identify those vehicles. It could not have been possible for the NRCS to identify each and vehicle on the road as non-compliant. we have to rely on the system. Our access to the system is only limited to the issuance of INATIS model number. We are not privy to see other details that are provided in the system. Hence, only the DOT and RTMC were able to identify these vehicles. And the second difficulty with the finding of the PP is the fact that NRCS could not have invoked Section 17 to the vehicles that have already been operating on the road, because the key issue is how did these vehicles get to be registered as taxis despite not having a INATIS model or a compliance certificate or an LOA issued by the NRCS. And if these vehicles are on the road, why they haven't been impounded by law enforcement authorities that are empowered to do so in terms of the legislation? The fourth finding by the PP is that the impact of the illegal converted panel vans into minibuses on the lives of commuters who are relying on these vehicles. Again, Chair, NRCS have no control on the individual vehicle registration process. That is the role of the registering authorities in the provinces and the DOT to ensure that all the vehicles that are registered properly on the system in accordance with the supporting documents that have been issued for a specific vehicles. We have recommended to the authorities that those vehicles should be dealt with in terms of the law. They should be removed from the road until they are regularized in terms of the TRP process that has been introduced by Department of Transport. The fifth finding, NRCS allowed the conversion of Toyota Quantum van into passenger carrying vehicle. Even if it was used for private purposes, and NRCS could not differentiate what vehicles were used for private purposes. Chair, again, I think this is an issue where the PP failed to comprehend the facts before her, because the facts are that Department of Transport, when they introduced the TRP, there were certain exclusions. One of the key exclusions was that the vehicles that are not meant for reward do not have to comply with the additional requirements for TRP process. And that has been a huge loophole in the regulatory space, leading to some of the MIBs exploring this loophole, in the sense of whenever they are caught converting vehicles, they would say, but this vehicle is not meant for reward. It falls into the exclusion that has been stipulated by DOT. So they were exempted from complying with the additional requirements as stipulated by DOT. That is where the distinction between the vehicle meant for reward and a vehicle not meant for reward comes in. It is clearly stipulated in terms of the TRP requirements and the exclusions that are attached thereto by DOT. The sixth findings, the model numbers issued by Peterson Taxi World and Philips were for private use and not for taxi type approval. As I've indicated, Chair, we have conducted the inspections at this Peterson Taxi World. Although we found them conducting the conversions, their response was that the conversion is one of those that was exempted from the requirements of the TRP as stipulated by the regulations. So there was nothing further that we could do as the regulator because our hands were bound in terms of the limited powers that we have in terms of the legislation. I know, Chair, you are not, the committee is not pleased when I say this, but I will repeat it because it's a fact that in terms of the PP report, they, although she makes all these findings against the regulator, there is no remedial action responding to those findings. The only remedial action that is pertaining to NRCS is that the minister of the DTIC must take effective and urgent steps to harness and foster good relationship between the SABS and the NRCS. And as far as that is concerned, we have proactively working with the SABS came up with the measures to improve and strengthen the relationship between the two entities. One of these was to conclusion of the MOU, which stipulate the areas of collaboration between these two entities. And I think we believe that the remedial action that is issued by the PP has been complied with as directed. Some of the improvements that we have learned out of the interaction with the PP and other stakeholders pertaining to these illegal conventions. For us, we have dedicated a team of inspectors who will focus on complaint handling, investigation of alleged non-compliance, compliant motor vehicles, investigation on misuse of INATIS numbers. We are auditing the registered MIBs who are classified as high risk. As I've indicated, we utilize the risk-based approach in the manner in which we conduct our investigation. We have also in the process of introducing the requirements to align to the regulations that have been issued in the TRP. In that process, we have started a process of reviewing the compulsory specifications. In fact, all motor vehicle compulsory specifications are under process of review in our project for Safer Vehicle 2025. We have also requested SABS to initiate a project to revise a standard that deals with registration of MIBs, which is funds 10319, and that process is within the terrain of the SABS as the standard body. We also now, Chair, despite the fact that it is not a legislated requirement, we require all modification of vehicles to be accompanied by the approval documents from the original equipment manufacturer of that vehicle. Thank you, Chair.
Very much, CEO and the team, colleagues. We have received the reports or the presentations. The bells in the house are ringing. Can I have your quick input as to how would you like us to go forward on this matter? Don't keep quiet on me now, please.
Chairperson, if I may.
Yes, I see also Honorable Noel Chungu. Sorry, I didn't see her. Go ahead, Honorable McDee, and then Honorable Noel Chungu.
Chairperson, I think due to the fact that that we've run out of time, Chairperson, I would strongly suggest that we absorb and then maybe come back and then thoroughly discuss what is needed, because I think what is brought out in some of the issues today is severe issues, and we really need to discuss this, Chairperson. So we don't have time today. So I've got about 60 things that I've noted, and I would really like to take some time going through them. So I suggest that we adjourn and then reconvene this meeting on another day, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable McDee. Honorable Noel Chungu.
Thank you, Chair. I think I concur with Honorable McDee. That's exactly what I was going to suggest. And also get DTI to give us what they're supposed to give us, because definitely they didn't say anything. All what they came here to do was to justify why they did not do their job. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Noel Chungu. Anybody, colleagues, honorable members, who is vehemently opposed to the suggestion that we adjourn, chew over these issues, and then reconvene this meeting? Honorable members, I don't see your hands. I take it, therefore, that the suggestion and seconded proposal by the Honorable McDee and Honorable Noel Chungu carries. Yes, it is unfortunate. However, it is what it is. Can we have Ms. Pele? I see you have your hand raised.
Thank you, Chair. I think today it was an attempt on our side to demonstrate what have we done with the entities under the DTI ambit. However, going forward, if indeed there are further issues that the committee would like us to address, but as I requested the beginning of the meeting, that it would be proper that to have a more collective and a collaborative approach forward, that the Department of Transport also form part of that recondition, so that we are able to really close the loopholes in our regulatory space, as the CEO of NRCS has indicated, that there are elements in our regulatory space that have created gaps for these illegal activities to be happening, and I think it will take more of a collaborative approach between ourselves and the Department of Transport to really get to the gist and close the loopholes going forward. So that's my request, Chair. I agree with the reconvening, but the reconvening must also, the Department of Transport must also be in the room.
Thank you, Ms. Pele. However, it's us here who decide who must be in the room, unfortunately. I know that the DTIC, when you're an acting DDG, you are the one who decides. But here, it's us who decide.
It was a request of the good chair, sorry.
Hence, I was specific to invite the honorable members to raise any issues they would like to raise. But your request is noted. And I have to call the meeting to adjourn. We have a sitting, the continuation of the State of the Nation debate. But thank you for your preparation. I am sure that when we reconvene, it will be shorter, will be specific to the questions. But once more, thank you for all of you for making the time and the preparation. Thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned. You will hear from the Secretariat. Thank you so much. The meeting stands adjourned.
Long live the Chair.